because I'm a believer and I believe we live in a spiritual world, and that didn't live on either side of our family. I believe it was a straight like spiritual attack. You might think differently, but what do you think it was?
I didn't know what it was.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I think I'm the third family member on this podcast.
Yes, you're actually, no, the fourth. We've had dad, mom, Sean, the youngest, now the oldest.
Wow.
And the only girl in the family.
True. The oldest should have gone first, but like you said, you know, I've been busy, so it's okay. Got in.
And we have done an interview like this before when I did my first podcast, interviewing young professionals. And it's been over 3 years now. So we are back in a little bit of a different setting too, which is cool to see. And this is something that you've done quite a bit of too in your career, as well as just doing interviews and stuff. So I'm super excited to have you on. And I'd like to just start off by kind of giving our listeners, viewers who've never met you, since a lot of people know me from Lit with Prayer and Faith and all of that stuff, this podcast is an opportunity to introduce my family and share more about you guys and the mental health stuff. But I'd love for you to share a little bit about you for our audience. You can start wherever, maybe just even telling them about what you've done in your career over the last 10 years in terms of your focus.
Definitely. Okay, I'll try to make it quick because I've done a lot of things. I've been blessed to have done so many different fun things in my life. But I guess my passion with my career started in broadcast. I have always wanted to work in front of the camera. And when I was in college, I got into kind of the sports scene. I became a dancer for the Cardinals, or cheerleader, if you will, and also a dancer for the Phoenix Suns. Next up, I ended up working for Fox Sports Arizona for 5 years, which was one of my most favorite jobs. We were the fans' connection to Fox Sports Arizona. So we got a chance to kind of tell them, like, okay, the D-backs are playing the Padres today on different commercials and things like that. And also just interact with the fans, which was fun. And then from there, I took my talents to LA to try to make it as an actor. And I happened to fall into professional wrestling. And then I fully took on that path, moved to Orlando, and I wrestled with the WWE for 6 years.
So a lot of people, when they hear about that story about wrestling,
yes,
because we all kind of grew up watching wrestling and there's so many diehard fans in that space, I would love for you to kind of share the story of how you actually came to audition and essentially get that, because I don't think many people think you, it's just, oh yeah, you're picked or you're this or that. So I'd love for you to share that story. I know you shared that with me before, but I think it's an interesting story people might find.
Right, definitely. I even think it's interesting because it's just kind of like crazy how I got into the business. But when I was living in LA, I was auditioning for different things. Like I ended up getting an agent out there and, you know, commercials, jobs like that. And then I saw a casting call for a reality TV show called Tough Enough. And if people don't know what Tough Enough is or was, because it's not around anymore, it was a show that the WWE put on where contestants would come in and to compete to win a WWE contract. So if you won the contract, you got to sign on with them. And I think you won like $100,000. So I saw that casting call and I was like, you know, I never have really wanted to do reality TV, but if I could win a contract with the WWE, that would be so cool. Because I've always thought the female wrestlers, the divas, were super awesome and just like powerhouses and like women's empowerment. So, and we also grew up watching wrestling because I don't know if you remember, you might have been too young, but with our grandpa, we would go over to his house and our grandma's house. Yeah. And we would be wrestling. We would, you know, we'd watch The Rock since we are Samoan. So that was kind of our connection there. So to wrap this story up, I auditioned for the reality TV show, which was probably the hardest thing I've ever done when it comes to the physical stuff. It was very challenging. But they didn't want me for the show. So they said, hey, we don't want you for the show, but we want you to come back and have another tryout to potentially sign on. So From there, I found a wrestling school to make sure that I actually enjoyed doing it and that it was something I could do. And I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the craft. So I went back to Orlando to have my tryout. And then from there, they signed me.
Nice. And I have to ask, since you did mention it, what was so hard about that tryout?
It, first of all, I don't think I have ever done a clean. Let's just start there. Okay. And so we had all of these sorts of physical challenges, and one was in the weight room where we're pushing a lot of weight. And a bunch of the other contestants were, we had some bodybuilders, former athletes. And yes, I was a former gymnast and I'm athletic, but I wasn't used to lifting like insanely heavy weight. So we're cleaning and I'm like doing my first clean ever. We're in the ring running drills. They're just having us run until we basically like cannot go anymore. So, and anyone who's been through a WWE tryout will understand. But I think the Tough Enough one was even harder because it was for TV. So they're going to want to see everyone struggle even more so.
Was that before you like got into lifting? Because I know that's something that's really important for you today. And maybe that came when you did go into WWE. So that was, it probably would have been easier for you today, would you say?
Yes, definitely. I mean, okay. I started lifting when I was like probably 24, like lifting heavy and, you know, incorporating just different styles of lifts. So I think today, like I would be able to do more of those things. Yeah, for sure.
For sure. And then WWE eventually came to an end. And then I know you were in Florida because that's where their headquarters was. You come back to Arizona. And now today, what are you involved in and what are you doing?
So I do lace up the boots occasionally. I still wrestle here and there. And that's something that I will always have a passion to do. I love it. I love the physicality. I love the storytelling. I just love the business as a whole. So I don't know if I'll ever be like, I'm retired. I mean, eventually one day, right? But not at the moment. And then I also do a lot of acting here in Arizona, which is mostly commercials because that's what we have here in our state. And then I like to do a lot of content creation. I like to do sports betting since I love sports. So that's kind of the areas I stick to now.
What I find interesting with wrestling is it combines the element of like your strength and natural talent, like you were a dancer, a gymnast, and then the element of acting, which is something I think you are really strong at. So you have kind of both of those things that make you unique in the industry that gives you the ability to be in front of a stage and put on a performance and stuff that I could see would be something that you enjoyed. Because I even remember the first time going to one of your wrestling matches here and we were up like real close and I was just kind of blown away in terms of this, although it's like choreographed and stuff like that, people are getting hurt. And I wanted to ask you about that. Can you share with us, and this can be any situation, can you share like a scene that went the wrong way or a stunt that you were practicing with someone that went the wrong way? Because I think people think, oh, it's all fake and you never get hurt or anything like that, but when you see it straight up front, like there's so much that goes into it.
Right. No, yeah, it's definitely, I would never use the word fake to describe it, even though that's what a lot of people use. But there was this one situation, I guess I can recall, and this didn't even happen in a match. This happened in training. So at the Performance Center, where every wrestler who gets signed to WWE usually starts, you learn everything from the ground up. Want to make sure everyone's trained right in the appropriate way. So we'll have days where we're just do like these in-ring cardio sessions. So you're running the ropes, you're doing drop-down drills. So this was probably when I had first started and I came in with a class. Everyone comes in with a class of other wrestlers. And my friend Bianca and I, we were like the first up for this drill. You know, we're always trying to be first. We're trying to show like our dedication and that we're there to work. And there was a drill where we had to throw a line or like a punch and someone is running and going underneath that punch. So I had done this drill before, but my friend Bianca had not. And with this punch or this line you're throwing, like you don't want it to look soft. You want it to look, you know, like you're really swinging for the fences. So we get in, we run the drill. I go, I swing my arm as hard as I possibly could and she doesn't duck. I think we just started too fast. Like they were just like, go. And we're like, okay, I knew what I was doing. She didn't. And I hit her square in between her eyes. And the noise it made was like, and everyone was like, and her eyes just start watering. So I clocked her in the face. She had two black eyes after that. I felt so bad. But it's one of those things where with anything, it's like, I'll never do that drill, you know, the wrong way ever again. You know, I'm always going to duck. Yeah. So,
I mean, you've shared with us and you've had a lot of like injuries and things that have happened with your hand and all of those other things and concussions and stuff. So I think that's the things that people don't actually always see.
Right.
Which is a huge part about it too. So I want to ask you one more question before we kind of pivot into talking about the mental health stuff. And that is, you've been able to do a lot of amazing things in the entertainment industry when it comes to sports broadcasting, you know, being a cheerleader, a dancer for different professional teams. It seems like so many of the different things you've gone for in your life, you've been able to achieve. And it's very inspiring to me seeing as your brother. Like, I always have thought now that I've seen so much evidence of it in your career that if Danielle's going for something, she's going to get it. That's just what I've seen because you've proved time and time and time again. And I wanted to ask you, how has your faith played a role in that as you have continued to have opportunities and just kind of boldly go for them, not knowing what's going to happen? How has your faith played a role?
I think my faith has played a huge role because when I look at myself and I guess think about myself as like a Christian, as someone who follows God, you know, we all go through our struggles and things like that. But something I really have been able to rely on is having that faith in God and no matter what, always praying and always trusting. And I think when I've gone after these things, like when I became or when I tried out for the Cardinals cheer team, I didn't make it the first time. And a lot of people can look at that and feel very defeated, like especially in that type of profession, a professional cheerleader, where a lot has to do with looks, like your body, like you can take that the wrong way and be like, oh, well, I'm not pretty enough or I'm not in shape enough or like all of these things. And so for me, I was like, okay, I didn't get it this time, but I'm going to pray about it. And it's something I want to do. So how can I just give up after one time? And so pray, trust God. And that's exactly what I did. And I even went out for another team, the Phoenix Suns team, after I didn't make the Cardinals. And I didn't make the Phoenix Suns team the first time either. So those were two back-to-back L's, which obviously, like, nobody likes that feeling. So you can dwell on it for a little bit. And then you're like, okay, well, God, like, this is something you've put on my heart to do. It's something I've wanted to do. And I know it's something I'm going to do. So I'm just going to pray and keep pushing forward.
Yeah, when you say that, it's a lot of walking by faith, not just by what you can see. Because just because someone says no one time, it doesn't mean that you can go and try out for it again. And I think a lot of people give up after getting that first L or that no or that job opportunity that doesn't say yes to them. And it's really easy to sit back and retract instead of continuing to pray about it, move forward, walking by faith. Is there something that you would share to someone who is in a position right now where they're looking for that next thing or they're excited about something, they're trying to trust God, but they have all this anxiety about like, is it actually going to work out? If you were to sit down, we have a lot of women who connect with the content that we make and the prayers and stuff. So I'd love for you to be able to just share any insight that you would share with someone who is in that position right now where they're kind of second guessing themselves. They're praying about it, but they still have that fear and anxiety to go for it. What would you say to that person?
I would say that I can completely, first of all, relate to you because I feel like we all go through phases of life and, you know, through our faith and walks with God. And I'm in a position right now where I have been feeling like that. And so for me, you know, I'll pray about what should I really pursue next? Like, what should I be doing? And I haven't gotten that answer yet. And so there are times when I've experienced a lot of anxiety behind it, a lot of, you know, just what am I doing? Like, I don't know why things are taking so long or this and that. And I think a lot of people can look at me and be like, wow, she's done like so many cool things. Everything just comes to her. And that's not true because I go through these phases where I feel like I will make no progress or even backwards progress within months of time. So if I were to sit down with someone like that, I would say, like, do not give up. Little movements and little progressions and believing and trusting in God is really just the key to keep you moving forward. And if you're not moving forward, it's not the end,
right?
You know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's what I would say. Like, I am going through a phase like that right now.
Yeah.
And so I just have to keep pushing forward and trusting God and honestly, like, relating to other people and talking to other people about it for encouragement.
For sure. It's like we go through these seasons of, like, harvest where everything good is happening and we're just excited. And then it's like you go through these droughts. It's like, what's next? I don't know. And it's really easy to kind of just sit back and dwell and be angry and sad. And I think that's normal for anyone to do. But then also ask yourself, like, well, what can I do? Like,
right,
you said, minor progress. Can I make a step in the, a direction to maybe apply for another job? Or I know you're very good at that when you're going through those, like, periods where it's like, oh, I don't know what's next. Let me just, like, put myself out there. Audition, audition. I think that's something that you've consistently done, which I know God is going to provide something. And I believe, even though you might not believe this, because you've been in so many different positions of growth and, like, bigger things, I do believe the next thing that's going to happen in your career is going to be bigger than what you did in the WWE. And I know that might be hard to see, but, like, that's how good God is.
Right.
And I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be something that's going to be really, really big, I believe.
I know. And that's funny that you say that, because as, like I was saying, going through these struggles of where I'm trying to figure out what's next, like, there's been times when I'm like, yes, God is going to provide something even better. Like you said, better than WWE, but what is that? I'm not sure. But then I've, you know, been down and been like, oh, you know, that was, like, the best job I had. Like, I can't believe I'm not doing that anymore. Like, I lost it. And it's been this back and forth thing. But also, to just put yourself out there leads to so many different things that you can never imagine. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm praying for it, like you said, whatever it is. And I haven't found that answer yet. And that's okay.
I even told you this too, just to put it out there. And I think what's happening right now is there's so much going on in Christian media with movies, documentaries. You see, like, Angel Studio, The Chosen, all this stuff. I think that God is going to give you an opportunity to maybe even move into acting in a capacity where you get to be a part of some of these more so Christian type movies that are less secular. And because I think God is, like, up to something big in this space. And if that was the case, or if you had an opportunity in that world, how would you think about it? Because I know it might not be as big, but I believe that that whole industry of faith and, like, encouragement and movies that are, like, they're involving God in it are going to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. But how would you lean into that if there was an opportunity that came?
I think I have just changed so much my thought process and what's important to me over the years. And I've been humbled. Like, I used to think, like, oh no, I want, like, you know, to be this big of a star, this and that, and I don't care what it is, you know? And as time has gone on, like, that to me, like, being the big star, being this or that, is, like, not important. Like, to me, it has really come down to helping other people when it comes to things that they're going through, their hardships, their struggles, because I went through all of that. And I listened to so many people, like, obviously you, of course, your stuff is, like, so good and so encouraging. But being able to kind of move into a more Christian space, I think, would help a lot more people.
Yeah.
Just because the message, like, overall, it's more encouraging, it's more positive. So yeah, I would definitely take the opportunity to do that and, like, dive into those type of projects.
All right, you heard that here first, folks. We're going to believe that God is just going to move you completely into this other space. It's going to be even bigger. But let's move forward to kind of the mental health stuff. So I brought the other sibling, or Sean, on, and the parents on, to kind of talk about what they went through, just to provide perspective to families who deal with this in any way, shape, or form. It can be mental health of any kind. I think so many different people are struggling with this right now, today. Anxiety, depression, specific mental health illnesses. And I think it's really hard on families. So I wanted to bring people in our family on to just share their perspectives. And everyone is completely different. So let's talk about where this kind of started, because you were with me during this time.
Right.
And it was in a time where you were going back to LA, because that's where you were living. You were doing filming and stuff. And I started to get a little, you know, more hyper, and I was almost infatuated with, like, oh, I got to go to LA too. And I can pursue these things. And I, you know, went with you back there. Mm-hmm. And I remember saying to Mom, and it was like the only time I've ever said something like this to her. And I very rarely see her cry, but I said, like, I might never see you again, because this was like the start of me starting to become different in that demonic oppression that I couldn't even see. But I remember saying that to her, and like, she cried, and Dad was like super mad. And then I was kind of like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then we just left. But did you notice anything on that trip about me, or was it still too early?
I think your behavior was definitely a little bit different, but this was happening gradually, because I think it started in Arizona, where you were diving like so deep into all of this like self-help stuff, but it got to the point where it seemed like you were over obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. And then you were over obsessed with just like energy. Like, I have all this energy, I can do all these things. And like, at first I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Cause like the energy was like contagious, and it was like all these good things were like happening for you. So I didn't think anything, you know, in Arizona. But when we got to LA, you were just, I don't know, things were like a little bit different. Like, I remember that there was this situation where you said you were like going to cook eggs for like my roommates and I, and you cooked like all the eggs. And it was like, we're not going to eat all these eggs. And like, you were trying to help, but yeah, you were just kind of all over the place, like very scatterbrained, like one topic to the next, to the next, to the next. And it was like too fast to even keep up.
Yeah.
So, and I think by the time you really seemed a little bit off in LA, I had to fly to Orlando, because I think that's either when I was doing my WWE tryout.
Yeah.
So you had to stay at my apartment, and I was like, I have to go. Like, I don't know what else to do. So you're going to just have to stay here and like, you know, live in my room until I get back. So yeah, that's what I experienced. But other than that, I didn't see you, I don't think, when I came back, because whatever else happened.
Yeah. Do you remember when I like went out to that club? Because I was staying with you, and you were still, I think.
I don't think I was there still. I think you were doing all of this when I wasn't. Really? I was no longer there.
What about when I visited, like, Hollywood, and they?
I was gone.
Oh, you were already gone. So you were maybe only there for, like, a day.
I was there for, like, a day or two.
Wow.
And then you started your Hollywood adventures.
Just got.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you about this then. Do you remember when I was like, Danielle, let me coach you? You remember that?
Yes.
And that, it's kind of funny too, because even
now
I was
you're a coach.
I was, no. I think it's funny because I was like, I'm going to just help people and change people's lives. And I'm like, I'm going to coach you, Danielle. But you remember I was like coaching you on like getting the WWE role, which is kind of funny to think about, because you did get it. I'm not saying it's because it was me, but having that positive influence, no matter if I was starting to act a little weird, probably was a good thing.
No, that's true. Because like I was saying, even in Arizona, you were like, the energy was like positive. It was good. It wasn't anything like negative. So that's why I don't think any of us really saw a problem. We're like, wow, he's just really like into the self-improvement, into like feeling good and like making everyone else like feel good about themselves. So, but then obviously with that, it's switched, you know, like with bipolar, it switches and then you're in a manic episode. And like, if you haven't been around someone like that, you don't really know it's like happening.
Yeah.
So.
And in LA, when you left, I went to this one place. I can't remember exactly where it was. It could have been, it was somewhere in LA, but I go park your car in a parking garage. And then I go to a Starbucks and I'm working there. And I actually talked to the pastors of our church, because I was trying to encourage them to use social media, which they did, which was cool, because now they have a YouTube channel and have for years and years and years. But after I got off that call, there was a lot of weird things that happened in LA. Like, I've had weird people walk up to me. Like, this one lady walked up who was old, and she had like all black on, and she was like saying all these weird things. And in my mind, I was like starting to be like a little bit more manic. So I was just so open. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very dangerous, especially in a place like that, where I think there's so much evil. And that entire day, I eventually never found the car. So I stayed out until morning the next day, not being able to find the car. And there's a lot of weird things that happened that night. And then I eventually found the car. And then I drove all the way home right then and there. I was like, I need to go home. And then I yell at dad and stuff. But when did you find out about that after I had like taken your car from LA all the way home? And I don't even know where you were at this time.
Right. I think I might have been still in Orlando because you probably would have been there, an extra like 3 days when all of this stuff happened, maybe two. And I was in Orlando for at least 3 or 4. So I'm pretty sure mom told me about it. And I was just like, okay. Like, what am I going to do? You drove the car home. Okay. Drive it back. Like,
you didn't think anything was wrong.
Oh, I definitely thought something was up because, like, you were already acting a little strange. And then the behavior to drive this car back. And I'm sure she told me, you know, everything that you told her, what happened. Of course, I'm going to think that's a little strange. Very strange.
I literally thought people were following me all the way home from LA. I remember this one because I was driving straight there and I had nothing with me. Like, you remember I left all my stuff at your place too? Again, the erratic behavior, all that. I was never like that. I was never like that.
Right.
But I remember driving and I thought these cars were following me. Because again, I was like starting to become more and more manic.
Yes.
On the way where I'm maybe 2 hours out from home, I'm like, I am so hungry. I need to eat something. So I pull over. And again, this is just my mind at that time. All three of these cars pull over with me. And I'm like, what is going on? So I run to the vending machine to get a Pop-Tart, grab it, run back to my car. And I, again, this is my mind at the time. People get in their car and they start going with me too. I'm like, what is going on? Like, I was freaking out.
Yeah.
Because like, again, I wasn't even leaning in my faith. I adopted this spirit of fear. And I think the enemy was really like oppressing. And like, that was just like the start. And then I go home and scream at dad until he starts crying. Because I'm like, what? I don't even know what was going on. Like, this is stuff I never would do. When do you eventually come home and see me or get back involved in this process? Because again, yeah, you were doing the tryouts and all that at that time.
I think it took a little bit because I flew back to LA after my tryout. And then I was there and I was still training at the wrestling school that I had started training at. So I don't think I came back for a little bit. And then I did come visit home and what I was able to see your behavior and things like that from there.
What did you notice that was different when you came home?
You were still paranoid about a bunch of different things and you would still kind of like talk all over the place, but it wasn't like constant manic. It was up and down. But then you would do like weird things. Like, I'm sure someone has already said this on the podcast, like, you were helping us move out of the parent, like the parents were moving out of the house that they were in. And so you were going to help tape up boxes, but instead of just taping the bottom of the box, you taped up the whole box. Mm-hmm. So there was a bunch of empty boxes all the way taped up. Like, what are we going to do with these?
Right.
So things like that, or what else did you do? Another thing, like, which you have never ever done in your entire life and still have yet, was like chain smoking outside.
Right.
You've never smoked a cigarette and then you're just chain smoking. It was very bizarre.
Again, I really think because I'm a believer and I believe we live in a spiritual world and that didn't live on either side of our family. I believe it was a straight like spiritual attack. I know you might think differently, but what do you think it was? Do you think it was just like, it was just, yeah, you had this and then you got over it? Because again, people already know that I was healed in a church service, but what did you think it was?
I guess at the time, because I had never really been around anyone with what you were diagnosed with, which was bipolar disorder, I didn't know what it was. I wasn't sure. But then obviously you can look up, okay, these are the symptoms. These are the types of behaviors and this is what it could be. But the reason I do think it could have been or was a spiritual attack is because you were able to get healed. And everyone I've known who has been diagnosed with bipolar disorder has to take medication and still takes medication. And if they don't take medication, then they go back to that behavior.
Right.
So the fact that you haven't taken any medication, I think is an indication that it was something more spiritual versus something just physical or scientific.
Amen to that. Completely agree. Because yeah, I will still have conversation with people about that where they're like, "Nah, you're just like Dad said." He's like, "Yeah, you can't just be like the one in a million of people who just don't need to take medication and they never." Because what they say is, if you don't take the medication, you will spiral back and have another manic episode, and this will
Yes.
keep repeating until it like destroys your brain so much where you become like almost like you just like break. So that's what I always try to tell people too. I'm like, it's 10 years, never had to take a pill. And I literally got prayed for. My hand shook, felt something lift off my body. Like, you cannot not convince me of what happened. Even the pastors were right there, visibly seeing it and a little freaked out too. So, what was the weirdest thing that you saw me do when I was around you and the family that you were like, what is going on? Like, there's something seriously wrong, if you can remember one.
I guess the ones I had shared with the box, putting the
Okay.
boxes together, the cooking all of those eggs in LA was a little bizarre. Smoking the cigarettes, of course. And I guess just thinking that people are constantly watching or like there's surveillance, things like that. And I know that is a symptom of other people who have those types of episodes. They always think someone's watching. They always think someone's like out to get them, but it's like, what would the reason be? You know what I mean? Like, why are these
Why do you
people
change?
after you?
For sure.
So
I think there's one that's weirder, which you might not.
maybe if you refresh my memory.
Yeah, I'm going to refresh your memory and then you can tell it from your experience because I don't remember much of it because, again, it's hard to put together all the pieces. But do you remember when we were at the house where it wasn't the one in Ironwood? It was the one that was by Cat Basin. Remember that
That's
house?
okay. Oh, the far, far out.
No, Cat Basin, right next to the open. That house with the cats. Do you remember when I like had the golf club and I was like, we're gonna go to California? You don't remember that?
No.
Oh my gosh. Well, I don't want to tell the story because it's different coming from my mind. But it was like you were there, Ross was there, Sean was there. I was like walking around with the golf ball like a cane. And do you remember I was like, Danielle, we're gonna go to California? And I like had that weird like laugh and all of that stuff. You don't remember any of that?
I remember it vaguely, but again, my memory is not top tier.
I guess it makes sense because Sean's thought process was, I just didn't know what to do, so I didn't like really, and it was probably you and Ross too, like, okay, we don't know what to deal with. Mom was the one who was the closest to it. I'm not saying you guys didn't help, but at least you guys didn't like say anything to me, like kick me out or try to like make me feel bad. Like no one did that, even though you guys didn't know what was going on. When you heard, well, actually, it was your car that I took. So why don't you share with us so everyone knows I took your car. Well, they don't know I took your car, I don't think, but I took your car and I drove to California and I crashed it on the freeway before pulling over and then running and then the cops and all that, which Sean shared that story on the last podcast. But when did you find out about that? Where were you?
I probably might have been back in LA at that point,
Okay.
or maybe in Orlando. I'm not sure, but when I found out that happened, obviously I was just wanting to make sure you were like okay. So once I found out you were okay, it's just kind of, it's not laughable, but at the same time, it's like, oh my gosh, like really? Okay.
Right.
Like, yeah, I was just happy that you were okay. I don't care about the car, you know, it just doesn't really matter with that. So.
Yeah. And did you ever come visit me in the hospital or were you not in that? Because I was only in there for 2 weeks.
I did come visit you. So actually, if we're talking about the weirdest things that happened, I guess it would be your behavior when you were in the hospital,
Okay.
because your thought process was all over the place, and like the things you would explain about being in there. And this was an RN, our cousin came in there at the same time. So there was a bunch of us, and you were telling all of these stories, but the way you would tell them was so weird. They were very like detailed, but also didn't really make any sense. So I think seeing you there was probably the strangest. And then it really makes the situation even more real. You are checked into a behavioral center.
Yeah.
So on top of the fact that you're acting completely different, you're also, you know, in this cafeteria visiting us, and then you got to go back and like stay here.
Right.
So that would probably be it.
Do you remember anything I said that was weird?
The only thing I can think of is you were telling us about people you were walking with in the hospital, and you were describing like your footstep pattern. You're like, I'd be 1 foot, then 2 foot, then walk, 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 like things like that. So that's like one thing I remember, but other than that, not too
Yeah, I
much.
remember some of that, but it's like when you saw me sitting there, did you like immediately notice, be like, this is not my brother, or there's like something like seriously wrong going on? And if you thought that way, did you think like, I don't know how he's gonna get better? Is he gonna be like, what were the things that went on in your mind? Because I know how dad felt versus mom and even Sean, but how did you think about that?
I don't know exactly what they had thought. So this is, yeah, like you said, just based on what I thought, I did notice that you were definitely different. And obviously it was like sad and concerning, but I didn't have like a thought in my head where I was like, he's never gonna get better or this is him forever. I never once thought that. So, and maybe it would be different if you were older, but you're so young. I'm like, this is not the rest of like Dane's life. And why has he, like, before you went into this episode, you were, and I think you said this is one of the things that upset you the most about going through this, is you were reading all these books, you were doing all this self-improvement, you were learning so much, and you had so much knowledge. And I was like, for him to like learn all that and want to do all these things and then just go into this diagnosis and forever be like that. Like, I never thought that that was your path or that was how you were gonna, be for the rest of your life.
See, that's so interesting because you and Ross are so similar, where Sean's like, I don't know what's going to happen. And you and Ross almost took this approach where you're like, hey, he's going to be fine. It's like, it's not even a big deal to you. Almost like it wasn't really a big deal to you guys, which I think is interesting because a lot of other people you would think would take it really difficult. Because I know that's what dad was. He was like, I don't know what's going to happen. This, that, this. And I don't know if it's even at that time, it was even you and Ross believing, like faith believing, like God's gonna heal him. It was just you guys going like, nah, it's gonna be okay. Like older brother, older sister, like you're gonna figure it out. It'll be okay. Like that's interesting.
Right. And I think Ross and I have been through a lot of like different things and been around a lot of different types of people and seen so many things and been in weird situations to where to see you like that, it's not like, oh my gosh, it's not like it's like so shocking to where, of course, I think with our parents, it might be a little harder to see your child go through it. But as a sibling, yeah, it was sad and everything, but yeah, Ross and I were on the same page. We're like, he's gonna be fine. Like, this is, he's just going through like this phase. So,
Straight blind faith. I love it. And I know you weren't there like the whole time too, because you were doing the wrestling stuff and all that. So I think it's a different perspective when you're just not around it as much, and you come and you're like, yeah, you're gonna be good, which is great, because then the way in which you guys dealt with it was just not, look at you, like this is gonna, like that really matters, how like families deal with each other. Like you could straight destroy someone's ability to think that they're gonna be okay if you immediately take that position, like, bro, you're gonna be on medication the rest of your life. That sucks. Like, good luck. Like, that's how some families deal with this, which is super sad. So when I was healed and eventually got off all the medication, did you notice something change? When did you notice my behavior start to change?
I guess I noticed, like, depending on when I saw you, like, you were back to normal. You weren't like manic. But I think this was even harder to see versus you being manic was your post when you got better, because you were just sad. Like, you weren't like yourself. So you were really like down.
Yeah. It's like I was down because I think the biggest thing is I thought all like the stuff I learned was like taken away, because it hurts your brain. That's what the doctor said. And but God like brought all that stuff back, which was great. And then I, got back to a place where I was like, I got it back. Like he restored everything. Do you think it was? Do you th Let me ask you this, and I'm not sure how you feel about this because mom felt a certain way. Do you think the diagnosis or what happened to me was an attack from the enemy, or was it like, do you think it was like a generational curse passed down. Where are your thoughts with that?
I feel like this is a topic we chat about a lot, at least within our family. And for me, I don't think she agrees with this, but I do sometimes think it was a generational curse because our grandma also had mental health issues. It might not have been the same. Maybe it was, like, I'm not really sure because we didn't necessarily see her before I was born. I guess she was going through something. And when I came around, she was able to help take care of me and it kind of cured that. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end of her life, she ended up, you know, having these issues again, but it turned her into, like, she was no longer there. She was alive, but she wasn't, like, there. Mm-hmm. Or we don't know if she was. So part of me does think it could potentially be a generational curse. And I kind of, not that I lean more into that than a demonic attack, but I think for me, yeah, I do lean more into that than a demonic attack.
No, I ask you that because Mom was the one who, when I asked her, she's more like, no, it was an attack. It's not a generational curse. And at the end of the day, it's like, well, it doesn't matter. It's like, it's right. gone. Like, mm-hmm. I had that friend who said, this was a generational curse that affected your family. It passed down to your grandma, to you, and it ended with you, and it will not affect any of your kids. And I was like, amen, brother, you know?
Right.
But at the end of the day, I don't think it matters because a generational curse, if it is a generational curse, it's like there's still a demonic attack. Like, the enemy's operating in that type of thing. But I don't think it really matters. But I know Mom was like, nope, it's not a generational curse. And that's where she stands, which is fine. But the good news is that it's gone and it doesn't affect my life. Did you ever think it would, like, come back or anything like that? Do you remember when, you know, we had that conversation in the fam and Mom and Dad were kind of like, you okay? And then you were the one who was like, yo, what are you guys doing? You know what I mean?
Right.
Because I'm like, yo, don't do that. That's like, but I'd love to know your thoughts there.
I didn't think it was ever going to go back because we already, like, claimed that you were healed.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I was angry with them when they were saying that because now they're, like, they're putting that worry and they're yes. planting that seed. And because our mom was so, like, for her to even say something like, oh, it's not a general curse, it's because she doesn't want to speak that over our family.
Mm-hmm.
But when she was like, I don't know, you're acting... That's her speaking over it again. Whether she knows it or not, it was. So, yeah, I wasn't too happy with that. But then, you know, they changed their tune and everything was fine. So,
yeah. And I get why she did see that because it probably brought up the past. And I think it was just like one day I was just talking about a lot of things, excited and stuff. But that's actually how my brain is made up. Like, even before all this stuff happened, I can process a lot of things. I can think about a lot of things at once. So when she saw that and she said that, you were the one person who was like, who said something? Because Dad kind of, like, backed her up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were like, why would you say that? And I'm like, let's go. Because in my mind, it kind of brings me back to that story in the Bible where it's like, get behind me, Satan. That spirit is, like, getting at you right now to make you feel like something is going to happen. And you got to, and I told her that too. I'm like, hey, I know that's not you. It's like that whispering to go, hey, this can happen again. And I don't know when that was, whatever, years or something like that. But I thought that was interesting. And you were the one who had my back. Everyone else didn't really say anything. And that meant a lot to me. But last question I'm going to ask you, and then we can end. If someone's listening to this right now, and they are a family member who is dealing with another family member going through something similar, mental health related, or any type of crisis, what would you share to them to give them some hope during a time where it's really difficult to deal with it because everyone on the family's in a different, on a different page, or they just don't know how to deal with it? What encouragement would you give to them to help them through this time?
I guess I would say love, positivity, and never giving up on your family member. And when I say never giving up, that kind of plays into love. It's like you have to love this person through it and show them that you're supporting them no matter what. Because I think the worst thing you can do is be like, you know, they're going to be like this forever. This is too much for me to handle. So I, you know, just like good luck. Or, you know, a lot of families, I think, just give up and turn their back. And you never know if that extra, like, love or that extra attention will be what brings this person out of it. So, I mean, of course, that's, like, easier said than done. And I know certain people's situations are harder than others. But I think all of those things, and of course, just keeping your faith and keeping strong in prayer and having other people pray as well, because that's, you know, what they say, like, of course, the more people that pray, the better.
Well said. Love is so important. And that's what we're reminded to do as believers, is to love people, even when it's hard to love them because you know they're going through something or they're treating you the wrong way. So I really appreciate that. And I hope that helped anyone who's listening to this who is going through that situation right now. Dee, thank you so much for being on the show.
You're so welcome. This was fun. Memory lane, but you know, you're healed, you're cured. So yeah, it's good.
Amen.